sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Key from L.A., the Big Ten Conference is the new SEC. I really think it's a one-year thing. I don't think the Big Ten will be better next year, but I'm arguing strictly this season. Another texter is paying players, hurting the SEC, was told Alabama AD was begging for money. Besides UT and Texas A&M, Big Ten probably has more money, right? I mean, Underwood went from being an LSU to commit to being bribed with money from Dave Portnoy and some other, you know, billionaire or whatever to flip him to Michigan. Mm-hmm. I do think, like, it's weird because everybody's like, oh, no, the NIL stuff and transfer portal, it's going to be unfair and it's going to be, you know, the powers are going to get even greater. And I was one of the few arguing, no, I think that the divide is the divide. I think the gap is the gap. I think there's a chance that it's going to stay even, maybe even help some of these schools. I think parity's greater now because of it.
I was going to say, I think that it's in the best interest of everybody that the Big Ten stays this competitive in a comparison basis and has the money to float around as well, so that we have more of these type college football seasons with more parity and more excitement when we get key matchups, not looking at Alabama steamrolling everybody, Georgia steamrolling everybody, and meeting for the third time in the national championship game. This is what everybody should want to see.
Another texture, Branham has never bet bowl games before. Motivation always plays a part. The SEC schools you mentioned had very little in your examples. Okay, I don't bet college sports because I can't do that. But let's eliminate the bowl games, texture, which we just did. Like, let's eliminate the meaningless bowl game. Ohio State beat Tennessee 42-17. USC beat LSU. Texas beat Michigan. LSU beat UCLA. The Big Ten has two wins, Ohio State over Tennessee, USC over USC over LSU. The Big Ten has, the SEC has two wins, Texas over Michigan, LSU over UCLA. Which two wins are greater? The Big Ten wins. So even when we play with your rules, which is what the SEC arguers always do, is they try to move the goalpost. Every SEC arguer will always do that. They'll move the goalpost. Well, I just think they're better because they're better. Prove it to me. Oh, the bowl games don't count because they're not motivated. Okay, let's eliminate them. Let's play by your rules. Which wins are greater? Tennessee by 25 points, another win over LSU, or beating Michigan and beating UCLA? It's obvious. It's a no-brainer. It's very easy to see which of the two are better wins. Another texture. How do you deal with the argument from SEC truthers that the SEC teams beat up on each other so they're more worn out at the end of the season compared to the Big Ten teams who have softer regular season schedules because they're not in the SEC? I do think that there is something to that. I think that is a fair argument. Because like Blanker said earlier, I do think that the bottom of the Big Ten is weaker than the bottom of the SEC overall. Like Mississippi State, awful. Kentucky, not very good. But then you get up to Auburn, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt. No, Vanderbilt and Oklahoma are capable of beating you. Yeah. Whereas the Big Ten, you have Purdue, awful. Maryland, awful. Northwestern, awful. Wisconsin's okay.
Like they got a lot of turmoil. They had a less than season, and now they've got an entire coaching staff that is under fire, and players are bailing.
Michigan State, not good. But then you have Nebraska. Like Nebraska's capable of beating you. Yeah. Washington, capable of beating you. USC, capable of beating you. Yeah, so I mean, I do think there is something to the SEC tough week in, week out, but I also think we overrate that a little bit too.
Yeah,
you don't think Mississippi State's a cupcake?
I was going to say, but we look at this and say over a 5-year span, 10-year span, you're going to see the middle to the bottom are going to fluctuate. You're going to get years for different teams that are going to be on the upturn all of a sudden. But for the most part, when you look at it, Vanderbilt's been bad. Right? They've been terrible. Northwestern had a couple.
Vanderbilt was okay this year for their standards.
Though this year they've been a lot better. But normally Vandy is the bottom feeder. Northwestern was good for a lot of years. And then now they've become a less than and a bottom feeder like they used to be. So I think that you get it's a little cyclical, but for the most part, Illinois wasn't normally a powerhouse in the Big Ten. But Illinois has kind of become the Michigan State for at least a year or two. Indiana, no one saw coming. Indiana might be a team that replaces one of the teams that, and Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah. It is a fun conversation, though. Good to debate some college football. 713-780-ESPN. So there's a report out there from Hector Gomez. Look, I don't know how much to trust Hector Gomez. He seems big in the Latin community for Latin ball players and stuff, but I haven't ever seen him, like, break a story. And I scrolled through his Twitter timeline today to see if, like, he had anything this offseason. He really didn't. So I don't know how much to really put validity into this Hector Gomez report, but he is reporting that the Astros could be the fly in the ointment for the Toronto Blue Jays signing Anthony Santander. Is this something you would like to see? Now, the Jays' offer on Santander, according to another report, is 4 years and $82 million. So you're looking at a little over, what's that, 20 and a 20 quarter, something yeah. like that. So a little over $20 million per year, 4 years for Anthony Santander. Do you like the idea?
Love it. I love it. I mean, we've talked about it over and over again, that no matter what they've done to this point, that they still need to add a bat to the outfield. If you're trying to replace Kyle Tucker, now that you've, you know, I think in both of our cases, rightly moved on from him and got something before he just walked out the door. If you get a guy that's going to give you 100 ribbies and 40 bombs, and you can put him in the outfield, and he's better than what you're projecting to put out there right now, if it means Jake and Chaz and Dubon and you know, periodically Yordan, I love it. I mean, you talk about bop in the middle of the order replacing a Kyle Tucker. It ain't Kyle Tucker, but it's damn close. And if he can give you some consistency and do that for these years that you're signing him at a far lesser price than even what Bregman's going to command on the open market, and you've gotten the guys that you've added via trade, I love it.
Yeah, 44 home runs, a career high. He had never had 40 prior to this past year, 102 RBIs, career high, never had more than 100 prior to this year. But he has been consistent. Like, prior to that, 28 homers, 33 homers the year before that.
It's cavernous ballpark he plays in Baltimore.
That is
too.
A very big ballpark.
Yeah.
Now, he is a switch hitter, and it's not as big to right as it is to left. But playing a Minute Maid would up his power. Like, if he had, I hadn't even looked at his baseball savant to see how many homers he would have hit at Minute Maid Park. There is some downside. Look, I'm in. Like, you want to bring Santander to Minute Maid Park, take over for Kyle Tucker in right field, I'm down. Now, he's not a good defensive outfielder, but he has a strong arm, so you can play him in right field, and it doesn't kill you like Chaz McCormick's arm would kill you in right field. So I think it's more natural. Chaz, you play left. Santander, you go play right. At least give us an arm there. Might not be the most rangy guy out there, but at least an arm that opponents are going to respect. The home runs are obviously the thing that you really look at. You're adding some dongs to this lineup. 44 home runs for him. Isak Paredes might be a guy who could chase 30. Christian Walker could chase a 30. You have Yordan Alvarez already in this lineup. Yiner, if he could ever lift the ball, could be somebody who's a home run threat too. So you would have some serious thump. Like, this would be a lineup that you would be fearful of making mistakes, because this team would hit mistakes a long way, and they would hit a lot of home runs. The negative of Santander, he's not a great defender, but I do think that it's an actual upgrade in right field because of the arm. He also would come with draft pick compensation, because he rejected the qualifying offer. The Astros have already used their second and fifth round pick. They lost that because they signed Christian Walker, and they were in the luxury tax. If they were to sign another qualifying offer, they lose their third and sixth round picks. So they would be without their second, third, fifth, and sixth. They'd be limited to their first and fourth, and then 7th through 20th. So that would be the downside of it, too. You're now operating at the competitive balance tax. If you feel like that's going to have a negative impact on the Astros going forward, you might not love that, although the Astros do have a lot of money coming off the books next year. I'm in. I like the idea of Santander a whole lot. I don't know how true this report is, but this actually feels like something Jim Crane would do, because while Crane, you know, might not want to operate in the competitive balance tax, we do know twice that he's willing to do it for a shiny new toy.
Yep.
And I think Anthony Santander fits the mold, or fits the definition of a shiny new toy.
I think it's also the impact, too. I think around baseball, a lot of people's feeling are the Astros are done, unless it's kind of a minor move for a less than guy that's sitting on the market that's like a veteran, like even if it's a profile or a guy even less than that. But if you go and shake the market up and go, hey, by the way, we're not only are we not done, but if we put Santander in the outfield along with everything else that we've done, bringing back the pitching that we're bringing back, and we still have Fromber right now, this team should be right there in the thick of everything in the American League.
Yeah. He actually would have hit lesser home runs in Minute Maid Park.
Really?
Believe that. He must hit a lot of pull home runs to right, because the right field's gettable at Camden Yards. It's the left field that's really, really tough. So he must pull a lot of balls out to right field.
Didn't they move the fence in last year, too?
It's weird, though, because like...
In Baltimore?
No, that's this year.
Oh, I thought they did it a little bit.
Might be right, actually.
Yeah, I think they did it last, and they're going to do it again.
I'm 50-50 on that. I know that they're doing it again this offseason. Yes. I can't remember if they did it again or previously. It's weird, though, because like how Baseball Savant does it is like they assume that all your ballparks are at that home park. So he had 44 home runs last year, but his Camden Yard expectation was 37. It's because they base it out for 162 games.
Right.
Like, if he played every single game that he played at Camden Yards, so he hit a lot of road home runs is what it tells
me. I was going to say, he's hit a lot of bombs.
So he hit 44 last year, The expected home runs at Camden were 37. The expected home runs at Minute Maid were 39. So it would have actually been two more than the expectation of Camden.
Huh. Yeah, I just I believe that he could have good offensive numbers in Minute Maid Park.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. In the
Dyke.
Big D.
The Dyke.
The Big D. Yeah.
You're going with the Big D?
Well, I think that I got a lot of raised eyebrows when I finished it, so I can just call it the Big D.
How did you finish it? Oh, when you said the Big Dyke. Yeah, I said Rosie O'Donnell. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I think that it's like, I understand that the con isn't fantastic. Like, hey, this is a team that's trying to reload its farm system, and now you're giving up an additional third and sixth round pick. But I'm also of the thought that if you're willing to give a second and fifth basically surrender that when you sign Christian Walker, that it actually makes sense to sign another qualifying offer player. Because, look, I'd rather sign two qualifying offer players in the same offseason as opposed to signing one this offseason and then another next offseason, because now you're going back-to-back if you're operating in the competitive balance tax, losing a second and fifth back-to-back years. I'd rather lose a second and fifth and a third and sixth in the same offseason than a second and fifth in back-to-back seasons.
It's almost like when you got the punishment and you lost the picks, but if you could just keep it consolidated to one season and realize, hey, we need what we need for this year. We'll deal with it for one year, almost like the punishment for doing what you had to do to stay hyper-competitive, but then bounce back after that when you start figuring out what you're going to do with some of your other contracts and where you might be able to get, you know, whether it's finances or otherwise. But at least this signifies they're still in straight go-for-it mode and the window is still wide open.
Yeah. I would be in for this. It feels a little counterproductive. It feels a little counterproductive to the whole, like, let's trade away our guys that are about to leave for prospects. But at the same time, we're just going to make the right move at all times. We feel like trading Kyle Tucker feels like the right move. We feel like signing Christian Walker, although we lose our second and fifth, feels like the right move. Or we believe it's the right move. Shouldn't feel like it is. You better believe it's the right move. Signing Anthony Santander, it feels like the right move. We believe it's the right move. We would trade off Anthony Santander. We would like to acquire him for a third and a sixth round pick. So maybe the Astros are operating that way. You look at Santander's road numbers last year and his home numbers, mm-hmm. Huge divide. At home at Camden Yards, he hit .218, .756 OPS, 18 home runs. In away games, hit .251, .866 OPS, over 110 points greater, and he hit 26 home runs. So 18 at home, 26 away. Yeah,
I think he will be very productive in Houston.
Could you, like, I love the idea of the thump in that lineup. The thump in the lineup would be scary for opposing pitchers.
I'm very skeptical about Crane doing this, but I would love it if he did.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of torn on that, too, because I don't think he wants to operate above the competitive balance tax. But at the same time, hey, we're going to be over the competitive balance tax if we trade for Greinke. Do it. Hey, we're going to be over the competitive balance tax if we sign Josh Hader. Do it. It feels like Santander can be in that mold. So I'm kind of torn on, like, the prediction of what Crane would do. Texture, shouldn't we get some picks back once Bregman is signed? Only a fourth rounder.
And then what about – and if you lose Fromber.
Well, that's next year.
But I know. I'm saying next year to try and get picks back.
It depends on where you are. If you're under the competitive balance tax, he would come with a first-round compensation at the end of the first round. But if you're over the tax, which Santander would clearly put you way over the tax, that would come with you only get a fourth-rounder for him. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Philip, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up?
Hey, just to piggyback on what you were just talking about with regard to Fromber and getting a pick for him possibly in the year. There's also the possibility that, hey, instead of taking a high school guy this year, you take a college guy to accelerate it next year, and you kind of flip it so that you're saving a year of development possibly by just prioritizing college next year over high school this year. So there's some gimmicks you could do. I mean, I'm not too worried because so many of these first, second, third, fourth round picks don't pan out. Yes, the top five guys, even a lot of them don't. But you would love to have a top five pick. I'm not discounting the next Bryce Harper or whatnot. But a lot of times, even the most hyped guys don't pan out and get to the big league. So, I mean, there's so much talent they get from international signings and everywhere else that I'd rather have the guy that is proven that is a major leaguer than worry about the guy that might someday be one 3 or 4 years down the line. And I understand that's one more bullet in the gun, so to speak. But there's a lot of bullets to this gun. Like, it holds a lot.
No, that's a good point.
Different quality, true, but, I mean, what's the difference between a third and a fifth?
Yeah.
Or a fourth and a seventh in baseball?
No, it's
probably
good.
Not that much, ultimately.
Right.
Good point, Phil. Appreciate the call. I think the other thing on top of that is if Dana Brown's best strength is indeed talent evaluation and development, then you got to believe you get a guy that's going to do exactly what Phillip said. He can analyze the college ranks if he needs to, because he needs a guy like Drew Gilbert that's coming out of Tennessee that's been seasoned in a very high-level college program that I can plug and play in my minor league system at a higher level than a high school kid that's going to take a couple more years.
I'm usually a draft pick hugger. I'm usually a prospect hugger, or at least I lean that way. Would I rather have Anthony Santander or a third and sixth round pick?
I'm taking Santander.
I'd rather have Anthony Santander. And to Phillip's point about Dana drafting college guys, I mean, he's nailed it. You look at what Dana Brown has done in the last two drafts. Sam Houston State, college guy. UC San Diego, college guy. College guy with his next pick, college guy. Seminole State, South Alabama. Radford, University of Illinois, Chicago. Southeastern University, James Madison. Cal State Bakersfield, Oregon. Like, his first 10, 12 picks are college guys. 2023 in the draft. Nebraska, UCLA, Georgetown, UNC Charlotte. High school guy in the fifth round. Towson, Stanford, Pepperdine, Toledo, and BYU. That's exactly what Dana Brown's doing. He's drafting these older prospects, trying to get guys that are closer to the big leagues. That way it tries to even out this big void that it was left in the Astros pipeline. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Jimmy Butler trade conversation is back out there. Would you be interested at all with Jimmy Butler as a Houston Rocket? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
DJ BNMA will be joining us at 5 o'clock to talk about the Texans. All right, Jimmy Butler trade conversation is out there. He had hear the audio yesterday with Jimmy Butler. It felt like James Harden talking about how he wanted to leave Houston. But Jimmy Butler yesterday about losing things in his life.
I've lost a lot of things, and one of them has been my smile.
That's not Jimmy Butler. That's the heartbreak kid there, Brian.
I know it doesn't mean a whole lot to everybody else.
Oh, is that not the audio you wanted?
That's not Jimmy Butler.
He lost his smile, though.
That's you know, you're a wrestling stan.
I fix myself.
Are you an HBK or Bret Hart guy?
And I have to go back and have to find my smile.
I'm an HBK guy.
Somewhere along the line.
Yeah, that's not, no, Jimmy Butler, that was Shawn Michaels losing his smile. Here's Jimmy Butler about losing something else.
What do I want to see happen? I want to see me get my joy back from playing basketball. And wherever that may be.
I don't hear the difference.
We'll find out here pretty soon. But I want to get my joy back. I'm happy here, off the court. But I want to be back to somewhat dominant. I want to hoop. And I want to help this team win. Right now I'm not doing that.
Can you get your joy back here on the court?
Probably not.
Shawn Michaels lost his smile. Jimmy Butler lost his joy. Don't want to play in Miami. Would you consider him in Houston at all?
Here's the thing. Giving up any of your key rotational pieces is ludicrous to me, to where I would say no. And just his own explanation. He's looking for a max contract after this year. He wants major, major dollars. He's saying he wants to be somewhat dominant, or however he phrased it, but not basically saying to be a dominant player in the NBA, to be the kind of guy that's worthy of the kind of contract that he's chasing yet again. And the history of his antics have been in multiple places now, to where you don't need the headache. Yeah, when playoff Jimmy is at his best in the past, has he been able to do a ton to almost single-handedly carry his team like he did in the bubble year against the Lakers getting to the finals? Yes. Are those days behind him? I think that they are. And that's why if you want to put a package together for the rest of the year that includes guys like Steven Adams and Jacques Landale and guys with big contracts that are not going to be in the long-term plans of this team for the next couple of years, then I would consider him being a guy that for the rest of the season, because he's playing for a contract, he might be a guy that you could go to late in games that you're lacking right now, but that you don't have to worry about giving a max contract to, that's the only possible way I'm even considering this, because they're going to want draft picks. They're going to try and get some of your young talent.
I don't know how much they can get, though. Like, you have a guy said he's not going to play for you and he's about to leave. Like, what is his contract? Because it says 2 years on the NBA trade machine. Does he have, like, an option?
I think there's an option, because I think after this season, they were saying he's chasing one of those $60 million a year deals.
Yeah, I heard that he was also, like, a rental. Like, if some team was acquiring him, that he wants, it's going to be a rental and that he's chasing a contract, which I like players who are chasing contracts.
That's what I'm saying. For the rest of this season, if you don't have to give up too much and it's just expiring veteran contracts that don't mean a lot to you in the grand scheme of things for this year. Yeah, so he'll opt out.
How much?
He thinks he's going to get more. But I think that he'll be playing and be on his best behavior for the rest of this year. But I'm not giving up Jalen Green.
Oh,
I'm not
no.
giving up, you know, your big, young, you know, most talented players with the most potential. I'm giving up guys that, hey, you got something for him. Maybe you get a pick down the way a little bit that makes this a little better for you. But overall, he wants out. The writing's on the wall. Riley, you know, came with this hard stance a week or two ago. We're not trading Jimmy Butler. Well, I don't think that there's any choice now. And I think that it seems like with his comments and some of the other comments that the conversations have already happened to the point where he officially asked for a trade. And on top of that, that he's basically saying, we'll find out in a few days now, or however long it takes to get him moved, that he believes this is the final straw to get him out of Miami.
Okay. I just put it in the trade machine.
Mm-hmm.
Who says no for this trade? Because I'm with you. I'm not trading any of my core pieces. Would you include Reed Sheppard at all?
I might.
Oh.
I might. Probably
he's
not.
He's already out of the core?
No, well, no. I think that's what I'm saying. He's not there for this year. Jeremy and I talked about it yesterday. I don't think that he's been what even we thought in terms of being a little bit more of a rotational guy, contributing here and there. So I think that for this year's contributions, he's out. But I can't. You would have to sweeten the pot for me to get something else for me to consider the fact that Reed Sheppard would be in the deal.
I don't know. I'm okay with the idea of trading Reed Sheppard, but it wouldn't be for a rental. It wouldn't be for an old rental like Jimmy. It would be for like. If he has to be a throw-in to get De'Aaron Fox, if he has to be a throw-in to get, Booker in the offseason.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes a whole – I wouldn't mind him being part of a big trade where you're getting your best perimeter score. I'm okay with that. If Reed Sheppard's involved in a trade that gets you the best perimeter score and improves you there, I'm cool with that. I'm not cool with the rental aspect of it. Would you – let's walk through this. How about Fred VanVleet?
Yep.
You would have Fred VanVleet in a deal for Jimmy Butler?
I don't really have any use for Fred VanVleet the way he's playing right now, and the fact in the future, even after this year, I don't think I have any use for him.
See, I wouldn't.
Who's running the point with him gone?
Probably Amen, but
you got Holiday and Amen, and got other guys that bring up the ball. And normally in transition, it doesn't matter if you're a PG or not that you bring it up, and you get a guy that you can go to down the stretch, which Fred hasn't been. You get a more consistent scoring option that gives you a multifaceted game that Fred was supposed to be giving you again this year.
Yeah.
And he really hasn't. He hasn't shot the ball.
I agree with what you're saying, but I wouldn't have him as part of a Jimmy Butler trade. Like, it's Jimmy. Like, if I'm trading Jimmy Butler, it's
for
all my garbage
after
guys.
This year.
I think it's a team option.
Because if you can get out of it, that's fine.
Yeah, I think
if there's
it's
just one left.
I don't think that Jimmy Butler helps you more than Fred VanVleet the rest of this year. And they're both kind of rentals.
I kind
of
think you do.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting conversation.
Because I think from a leadership, from a on the court, from a go-to guy, from a guy you can give the ball to and get out of the way for the rest of this season, would I rather have Jimmy Butler or Fred VanVleet? I'm taking Jimmy Butler.
Look, I've been very unhappy with Fred VanVleet.
Yeah,
I haven't
shot it well at all.
But I would go.
It's a club option, by the way, for Fred next year.
Yeah, I would go VanVleet over Butler, though. We're going to ask the Hive that one because
that's a good question.
I am interested about. Would you? How about Dylan Brooks in a Butler trade?
Goodbye.
What? What is wrong with you? Dylan
He's
Brooks has been good this year.
I get out of. I think after this year, because of the fact that Tari and Amen have become such great defenders, and that's what he hangs his hat on, that I get out of $90 million or whatever's left of that outrageously annoying contract that Dylan Brooks signed, and I get the opportunity to do something else with that at the end of the year, and I still have guys that can defend on the perimeter. Yeah, I would love to get rid of Dylan Brooks.
I'm out on that. I see where you're coming from the future. Like, that to me is the most appealing side of the argument for me. if I'm looking at strictly this year, I think Dylan Brooks is far better than Jimmy Butler. He's your best defensive player, I think. I think he is your vocal guy on the defensive end, making sure everybody's in the right spot. And he's been a good shooter. Like, he's been a good shooter this year. So I much rather have Dylan Brooks this season over Jimmy Butler.
I got to get out of here. Yeah.
That's a compelling
point. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, that is a compelling point. 713-780-ESPN. So that's interesting to me that you would go both Fred VanVleet and or not and that'd be too much contract. So it'd be one or the other. I'm surprised you would go both for Butler.
Jeremy, what have we seen in the Minnesota game, in the Miami game, in the Toronto game, where at least they found a way to squeak it out? Which is, no matter what they do for the first 45 minutes of the game, the last 3 minutes they can't finish, and they don't have a guy they can go to that can basically be guaranteed bucket or line and make the free throws. And the way that they execute an offense, I think that, aside of head and shoulders above those two guys, Jimmy Butler's the guy that still can do that.
Yeah, I rather have – it's difficult because the Rockets would be kind of out without a point guard, but I would be way more comfortable trading Fred VanVleet than Dylan Brooks. I think Dylan Brooks' importance to this team is pretty substantial.
I don't see it as substantial.
You don't think he's your best perimeter defensive player?
No, I think he can be your maybe best perimeter defensive.
Maybe a mid.
Yeah. But I also think Amen and Tari are in the conversation.
Yeah, I'm worried about Tari's
not playing
injury,
right
though.
Now. That's it was supposed to be just a miss a game and be, you know, for like kind of R&R and getting some things right. He's supposed to be back. And now, you know, it's a mystery. His mom's got to chime in and say, nothing to worry about. I'm not worried when fans are worried. Well, then why isn't he playing?
Yeah, the Brooks contract is a
that really contract good for that many years at that amount of money for what he brings you is just not worth it
well,
for the
I
long term.
See, I think you're underselling what he brings you right now.
Right now for this year, I understand your point. I think after this season, I think you can turn the page easily from Dylan Brooks, and with the money that you're saving getting out from under that, I think you can recoup what you need.
The problem is that you wouldn't be able to spend that money. Like you're not going to be under the cap to where you can spend the money that you're losing. You wouldn't be able to be like, okay, well, Dylan Brooks is making X amount of dollars. I
is
can
that
now repurpose.
Alpi and Jalen kicking in?
Yeah, and then some of the other guys you're going to have to sign, too. So, like, you're not going to be able to repurpose the dollars that Dylan Brooks has. And also, in a reverse escalator, like, it's a reverse escalator contract, so it actually decreases in
they
terms
might
of
have
salary.
They might have front loaded.
They shoot 39% from three this year on a team that a bad 3-point shooting team. I would not like to lose Dylan. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Coward D, happy new year, my best friend. What's up, Coward D? How are you?
Man, what's up? What's up, Jeremy? What's up, other guy? I'm a bad.
Now I'm the other guy? What, you switched allegiances in 25?
Nah, look.
No blank, man.
Jeremy. You've had some bad take before. I'm thinking of the Will Levis take.
Yeah.
But for you to say that Fred VanVleet would have a bigger impact on the Rockets the rest of the season than Jimmy Butler, that is the craziest thing I have ever heard.
Ever?
That is, I'm going to hang up and listen.
No. More reason D to respect and remember my name. Remember my name, Coward D. Don't coward out on this one.
Look,
no
I'm not.
Blank, man.
Yeah, remember that.
I mean, Fred VanVleet's your starting point guard. Jimmy Butler hasn't played basketball much this year. Like, is that a wild take that I think Fred VanVleet would be more valuable to you right now than Jimmy Butler? When was the last time Jimmy Butler played basketball?
He played the other night. That's why he sat in the fourth quarter. They benched him.
Prior to that, he hadn't played since December.
He's also 36, so you're not going to expect these sort of things to get better
over time.
That's what
I'm saying. Playoff Jimmy was at its peak when he was in the finals against the Lakers in 20, whatever it was.
And then like 2 years ago, he had
a really
good run.
But I still think that going down the stretch of a key game, I trust Jimmy Butler to get me a bucket or get to the line and make more than Fred VanVleet.
Look, I'm not opposed to the idea of Butler. I'm opposed to the idea of Butler if it means that you're getting rid of one of your young players.
Right, I'm not doing that.
But the whole, like, I'm going to trade my starting point guard. Look, I'm not happy with Fred VanVleet either, but I'm going to trade my starting point guard and uproot what I've been doing all year that has me top three in the Western Conference right now to trade for Butler, who you don't really know what you're going to get, that's an older version of himself.
I think he's a better finisher closer than
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that, but I think that it would be a significant move. Like there's lot of upheaval there. Like you're the third best team in the Western Conference, and you're going to trade your starting point guard for a guy who's played two games in the last month, that's in his late 30s, and has scored 9 points in each of those two games. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know which Jimmy Butler I'm getting. Now, I'm not opposed to adding Jimmy Butler and adding him to the rotation. I don't want to trade from my rotation to get Jimmy Butler, though. And you're also only getting him for 1 year.
Right.
Like, there is no way that you're extending Jimmy Butler. If you're trading for Jimmy Butler, that's going to be a prove-it deal. You come in here, play the rest of the season with us, and then try to go find your money elsewhere. So you'd be trading for, you know, the rest of the season for Butler. Now, I do want to get out of the Fred VanVleet contract, which you can because you have a club option for that. But trading your starting point guard for a guy who has a lot of questions, I don't think would be in the best interest of the Rockets. Now, if you wanted to trade a bunch of young players, not young players, but a bunch of the cap fillers you were talking about and add him to this rotation, okay, because now there's not risk. Like, I put together this quick trade offer and trade machine, and you'd have to include draft picks to entice Miami to do this.
Right.
But you can make it work contractually with Steven Adams, Jock Landale, Jeff Green, Jayshon Tate, Aaron Holiday.
Those are the guys I was rattling off that said, if you want to make that and throw in a draft pick down the road, I'm all good with
that. That's where I'm okay with Jimmy Butler. I'm not trading for my starting five for Jimmy Butler. But if I can get him for all my cap filler and then enough draft picks to entice my – and I don't think it's going to cost a ton. Because
right.
I can't see a team that's going to trade –
Well, he's essentially on the market as a rental because of – that's a divorce. That's not going to – they're not – that's irreconcilable differences.
There's also – it's very tough to match a salary. Like, there's not a whole lot of teams in the NBA that can match his nearly $49 million salary. Like, the Rockets are going to be one of the few teams that can match that salary or enough to trade for that salary without giving up some of their key pieces. So I don't think the cost for Jimmy Butler would be a whole lot. I think you can get it for cap filler and a few draft picks. I much rather do that than trade my starting point guard or my starting small forward, and I'm certainly not trading for my young core.
I think your owner... And when they were talking about getting to the next phase, I think this gives you a clear chance to do that while not mortgaging your future to kind of make sure that you also stay relevant like this for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So, like, I personally wouldn't trade Fred VanVleet or Dylan Brooks. I wouldn't trade from the rotation. You'd be okay trading either one of those guys. Yep. But we're in agreement that we wouldn't trade from the young nucleus.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's where we're definitely on the same page. 713-780-ESPN. Stop the cap. Brooks can't compare to Jimmy Buckets. I don't know why you need to trade Dylan Brooks to bring in Jimmy Butler.
The biggest thing is just if you're thinking big picture like I am about getting out from that ridiculously gaudy contract that I don't think he's worth, then for the long term, you're right. This year, as he is your best perimeter defensive player, I think you can replace him with Tari and Amen as we get down the road. But for this season, the only reason why I'm throwing Brooks in any deal is because I can't stand that contract after this year.
It's not really that bad. I mean, I think Jeremy mentioned that it'd be a de-escalate. Like the next two years, it's 21, and then the last year, it's 19. It's really not that bad by NBA standards.
I know they had to spend it, and they were able to do it so that then to give them the flexibility, they did that. But even still, that's a lot of money for that guy, but that's just my opinion.
Under 20 for a starter is not
that
bad.
He's been good. He's been good. Like, he's not a guy you're going to go to for a bucket, but he's been a good – you want that type of player on a winning team.
That's what's driving me is the fact that this team is overachieving and doing so much more than I thought they were going to do for this season. And the fact that they're in the top four in the West right now, and the one thing that's hurting him is losing games like they did to Minnesota and Miami and almost to Toronto is the way that they don't close games. And I know Jimmy Butler doesn't have to do it for a full 48 with this team, but in the final 5 minutes of a game, is there a guy that I can absolutely hang my hat on and get a bucket from? That's what I like.
How do we know he's still that guy, though? Like, he's 35 years old.
I don't need him for next year. For the rest of this season, I think he's
right,
still
35 this year, though.
But I think he's still got that in him for the rest of this season.
Yeah.
And he's not putting a lot of extra wear and tear this season. That and Spoelstra's even out there after the game going, I got to get the ball in his hands more then, and I got to get him the ball in the fourth quarter. Whatever, and maybe some of that is coach speak, but at the same time, based on what I've seen of the Rockets, the one need that they have is exactly what Jimmy Butler could help you fix.
I didn't expect anybody to be okay with VanVleet and Brooks or Brooks being involved in the Butler trade.
That money drives me nuts with Brooks. And I just don't think Fred has been anywhere near productive enough this year.
What does Jimmy's numbers really look like? Butler this year, he's only played 22 games and not much recently. He's averaging 17.5 in 31 minutes. He is shooting – he doesn't shoot many threes, but he's shooting 38% for three.
He's not a three-point shooter.
He's shooting 38%, but he only takes 1.5.
Yeah.
Rebounds, 5.5. Assists, 4.7. That's not that far off from what Dylan Brooks is doing.
But you don't – I don't like – I've made it my case. I can't stand that contract going forward just because I think he's going to also diminish defensively in the next couple of years.
I mean, Brooks is only
he's 29 right now.
Yeah,
Okay. It's, I just, that's my opinion.
I know, but I, just in the conversation that we're talking about diminishing Jimmy's 35,
I'm only
29.
Getting Jimmy for the rest of this season yeah. with a better chance to win more games, go deeper in the playoffs, and possibly rattle some cages with the big boys, as opposed to this team being who it is right now with what they're lacking. Yeah, Dylan Brooks is great to defend one guy, but how many more wins is he going to get you, not only in the regular season, but when it matters most, when you get a playoff-tested guy that can get buckets?
I mean, you could say the same. Well, I mean, I feel like you're describing Butler with what he has been in the past and just assuming he's going to continue to be that guy
this
year.
I haven't watched Heat games consistently enough to know how much of this is just the squabble that's been going on all year.
Yeah.
And how much is it that he's not playing to his standards and levels. But if he's going after a full max again, then he's going to have to perform. And because he's got a lot to prove to get there, I would expect the best of whatever he's got left from Jimmy Butler, and I like that to finish a game.
Look, I'm not opposed to Jimmy Butler, so I'm like, it sounds like I'm poo-pooing on the guy. I like the idea of Jimmy Butler as a rental. I just don't want to do it from my rotation. Like, I don't want to trade away from my rotation for a team that's 22-11, and then we're making this huge kind of major move that kind of just shakes the foundation of what Ime Udoka has built. That's why I don't want to trade from the rotation. Now, if you're trading a bunch of fillers and draft picks and now adding him to this rotation, okay. Now you're in business a little bit. You keep your starting five. You got your young players. Jimmy Butler's, I'm sure, would be a starter, although that would be kind of interesting. Who's he starting over? So, like, that to me helps your team the most. That's why I'm opposed to trading from a starting five that has led you to a 22-11 record.
Yeah, my initial thought was the only way I'm doing this is if you did the package that you ended up putting together. If you could just take the veteran contracts that
have
enough money
scenario.
To it, yeah, and you throw in a draft pick down the road, they at least save some face to get something for him, but it's not anything that impacts you negatively that actually makes you better for the rest of this season. That's what I'm all. Otherwise, I don't even want to consider it, and I'm never considering anything giving up the young core.
Yeah, that would be
You got another follow-up question. Just that one you just asked is very interesting, too. Like, if he starts, which he's going to start.
Yeah, he would have to start
is it
over.
Jabari?
That's a small lineup.
Or it's Dylan Brooks.
It could be Jalen.
I don't think they could do that.
Probably not enough shooting, not enough offensive
I don't think they
creativity.
Could do that, yeah.
You can't do that because of why?
For a multitude of reasons. Just because you're going to get tons of pushback from him, and we know when he's gotten gone in the tank in the past.
But you get more pushback from Dylan or Jalen, though?
Oh, I don't. I think Dylan Brooks got his money and everything like that. I don't think Dylan Brooks is going to push back if it's for Jimmy Butler.
You don't think so?
I don't.
That would be the easiest.
Yes.
It's just him start at the three
over Dylan. Then Dylan still can be your best defender. He maybe get more minutes off the bench, you know, against the other team's second team, and then he may finish games for you.
And you could go small with that
right.
four. You should probably don't want to start with it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm open to the idea of Butler. I just don't want to trade for my starting five
but
or
that's
my
the
rotation.
Only reason, that's the only way I'm open to it. I'm not giving up any young guys.
Blankers, tell us how you really feel about Brooks, LOL.
I have in the past, so I've never shied away from that.
No, you have. You've been consistent. Brooks built our culture. It is core part of what you're writing. Core part of that, you're writing him off like he doesn't set the tone night in and night out. See, I think he does do that. Forget Jimmy. Go get De'Aaron Fox. See, I think they would be two separate
that's
trades.
That's a totally different conversation because now I would include Jalen in a De'Aaron Fox move if it guaranteed that I'm signing De'Aaron Fox long term.
Yeah, I also think it's a different collection of players. Like, we're not talking about Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks in a trade for De'Aaron Fox. You're talking now about the young core that we don't want
to
wouldn't trade. Yeah, like, to me, it's a different player pool altogether.
That's a totally different conversation because of the fact that they don't want any of the veterans. They want a good – they want a couple of your young guys and some good draft picks.
We're 22-11. Let's not get crazy unless it's a home run deal. This team has great chemistry. We finally have a winning season. Let's ride this out. That's why I'm not trading from the rotation, but I would add Butler.
That's the home run deal is you don't have to give up any of your starters or your young guys, and you throw in a pick for down the road where presumably you're good enough that pick's not going to matter, and you get a guy that makes you better for this season than you are now with the record that you have.
We've gotten the most out of Fred VanVleet. Butler pushes these young guys to the next level. Another texture, Amin Green, Butler, Jabari Brooks, Shingun would be a contender this year just on defense, probably. Fred VanVleet, a couple seconds for Butler. I wonder also if Miami would be interested there. Another texture, pass on Jimmy Butler. Heck to the no on Jimmy Butler. He doesn't seem like he is. He seems like he's been a cancer everywhere he has been. I actually watched that Starting Five show on Netflix. I like Jimmy Butler. Like seeing the behind the scenes actually made him more endearing to me.
He seems like a very, very likable dude. And you know, being from the outskirts of Houston, which he doesn't like to be from Houston.
That's weird.
He's from Tomball. He works out at the gym I play basketball with in the off season, and he's social and friendly and
I work out.
And I mean, he just seems like a really good dude.
Yeah, he seems likable.
I also like the fact that he can also separate that when it's game time, when it's business time, he can reel in the young guys. He can be a coach on the floor. He's a no-nonsense guy to get guys to play the way they have to play. And this team always could use that.
Yeah. No, I like, again, I like the idea of it. It's just we're different on what we would include for him. I think we're both open to the idea of it. Another texter also saying Dylan Brooks will have a bigger impact than Jimmy Butler moving forward. Branham turning into Joe George. Why is Joe catching strays? Why is Joe George catching strays on with us? All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is a realistic expectation for Deontay Johnson? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I shouldn't complain, but it's me. Some of these betting apps give you these free bets every now and then. And like this free bet that they just gave me, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, combined total points, odd even. What am I?
Playing war?
Odd, I guess. Like,
yeah, it's just a 50-50 coin.
Give me the point total. Give me the spread. No, odd even. That's my free bet. I mean, I shouldn't complain because it's a free bet, but it just feels like a silly free bet. Hopefully I win. Hopefully it's odd. What's the play there, odd or even?
I can't even. I don't even know if there is a strategy there.
Like,
I'm sure somewhere there's a gambler that actually would say there's a strategy to this, but I can't think of what it would be.
Maybe odd because the first points are almost always going to be odd.
Well, actually, now that I'm thinking about it,
they're both odd.
Maybe say odd because field goals were three, touchdowns, you kicked the extra point were seven. So we're talking about a lot of odd numbers.
But if you get two of them,
now it's even. I don't know, man.
Yeah, then you go 6-10 as opposed to 13-17 as you keep going up to 21, which is another odd.
Literally
is a crapshoot.
Give me the spread. Give me the point total.
What do you think the score is going to be? And then just go with that. Is it odd or even?
I haven't put like if
you,
yet.
Well, I'm sure you look at the point. Game for BZ money. Like if you in your mind, I'm just saying, like in your mind, if you think it's a whatever point game and you think the over is going to hit or miss, then you could come up with it from there.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it. Actually,
I think that's the only way.
That's probably the way to do it. All right. Nick Caserio, I kind of found this funny. Caserio, who loves to talk with John and Rock and Roll, Vandy, does his little weekly thing with those guys on Houston Texans YouTube. Here was Nick Caserio when asked about, asked from John Harris about preserving the health going into the final game of the regular season.
Every game takes on significance whenever it is, whatever the circumstances are. So fortunately, I've been kind of in this situation multiple times.
Listen to that. He's been in the situation multiple times. Look at that little subtle flex.
I'm the best there is, plain and simple.
A little subtle flex from Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
I've been there multiple times.
Were you in charge during all those times? No.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm the best there is, plain and simple.
I've been there multiple times. I have all these Super Bowl rings. Nick Caserio, a little subtle flex.
I had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but that's irrelevant.
It wasn't because of me, because of Belichick and Brady. But, hey, look, I've had a lot of history with
this final week of the year
having to rest. I remember I was in New England. Look, Caserio, a little subtle flex. All right, realistic expectation for Deontay Johnson. Here was D'Amico Ryans on what to expect from Deontay.
No, it's late in the season, our last game. We add a new guy to our roster, but I told the guys, throw the kitchen sink at him. Let's see what he can absorb, see what he can handle, and go out here versus Tennessee, and let's see what he can do. We know he's a talented player. He's proven that at multiple stops. It's just a matter of him just coming in, and, man, how much can he pick up, and how can he come out and help us? Yep. You know, we'll see that this game, yep. Try to get him some opportunities there. And as I mentioned, Deontay, man, it's a fresh start with me. Yep. Every guy that I get is fresh start. Really don't care what happened in the past.
Fresh start. We're clean slate. All that good stuff. That was D'Amico on with coach. I think they do coffee with the coach with Vandy and John Harris. A texture, realistic expectation for Johnson is to have no expectations. That way, whatever he does produce is a pleasant surprise. That's the old saying of undersell, overdeliver. It's very similar to that. Deontay going to be prime AB? Is that too much to ask? But listening to all of them talk, like D'Amico, CJ, Nick, they always talk about how good he is at separating, like kind of a man beater. Like he runs good routes, he gets open, all of that. What do you think is a realistic expectation for Deontay Johnson?
I think we're this late in the season to where realistically I'm not expecting a whole lot, but I would expect that he can be better than John Mechie. I believe that because of his experience and his abilities that he still has, that I believe that he can be a guy that gives you more than what you have out of three, four, five in your receiver room. I think that realistic expectations is all going to come down to how much of the offense he can grasp so that you know how much I can have him on the field. Because if he's on the field, I think he's better than Hutchinson. I think he's better than Mechie. And as long as he understands the playbook and the routes, I believe that that can be a huge benefit. So I'm not expecting that. I'm hoping that.
Yeah. For me, my realistic expectation, like more on the hopeful side, is that he just comes through at a big moment. Like he makes a big play. Like I don't think he's going to have this 7-catch, 95-yard, 2-touchdown performance. To me, it's make a big catch in a big moment. Like, and it might be in the wild card game against the Steelers, right? Like, not this huge, like, oh, he's going to take us to the Super Bowl. But maybe he makes the go-ahead catch for the touchdown to beat Pittsburgh 20-17. Or maybe he makes a critical third down catch that leads to a game-winning field goal. So the optimistic expectation that I'm hoping for Deontay Johnson isn't this huge game, because I feel like that's unrealistic. It's just make a big play in a big moment that, you know, gets you a playoff win.
I mean, he'd love to get it against the Steelers, right?
Yeah, he would.
I mean, he would love to do it if they played the Ravens. But at the same time, as long as he can get better separation and he can run the routes to give CJ an open target, I'm with you. I think if he gets 30, 40 yards and he gets a couple of catches, but at least one of them is a game changer in where it happens in the game and what it does, then I think it's a win. That's why I'm always pro kick the tires on the veterans when they're free, because they can be better than what you have on the roster.
Yeah, especially with the injuries. Expectations for Deontay, more drop passes than no effort. Sincerely, a Steeler fan. Don't expect much from Deontay. The only reason he's on the team is because the Panthers got rid of him for a few draft slots and a pick swap. Then he refused to go into the Ravens game against the Eagles in the third quarter and got cut. Okay, there you go. All right, 713-780-ESPN. DJ Bienema covers the Texans for ESPN, ESPN.com. I'll ask him what are realistic expectations for Deontay Johnson and much, much more. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.